A very good morning on behalf of Teach 613. We welcome you to Take 10 for Talmud. Yevamos Kuf Yudali, Yevamos 114b, pagination 228. The second half of the page, a new perek ha'isha, which deals with the case of an aguna. Now, sometimes in contemporary language, we use the word aguna referring to a man who is being very difficult with his already separated wife. They're living separately, and he's just being difficult, and he's not giving a get. The classic case of aguna, though, that we deal with is with two people. It's a couple, and they never meant anyone any ill, but he disappears, and he's disappeared for so long that he's presumed dead, but we can't quite prove it. And that's the case that we discuss over here, that the woman is left as an aguna. She's still connected to her husband, halachically, until we can prove otherwise. And there are significant leniencies that we have in proving that the husband is dead, in that we don't require two full-fledged witnesses to stand up to major cross-examination the way we would require in other areas of halacha where we try to prove things, for example, capital punishments. We would cross-examine them extensively, and it would only be two valid halachic witnesses. In this case, Mishum Aguna, in consideration of her plight, and in recognition that Isha Daika Uminsiva, a woman will check deeply into the accuracy of the report, because she realized that it's a tremendous chumrah would result if it turns out her husband's really alive. If he shows up into town very much alive, and she got married to somebody in the interim thinking he was dead, it comes down very hard on her. She's forbidden to both men, and the children from the second marriage are going to be mamzerim. Because it's so serious, we're confident that she's going to act with responsibility, and therefore there are degrees of leniency in how much proof she needs to bring. This is a sugya of its own. How much proof has to be brought in such cases to allow the woman to remarry and generally to collect her ksuba money as well? For example, there's a concept called mayim she'ein lahem sof, water that does not have an end, endless water. And if a person fell into such water, even though we did not see him emerge, and we waited a significant amount of time, if he's still under there, he's for sure dead. But because it's Ein Lo Hem Sof, because there's no end to this water, we're concerned that he might have swam underwater to a different location of this water, and he emerged unbeknownst to us, and he's alive. And therefore, even though the water is so big and so overwhelming, on the contrary, in certain cases, so big, so overwhelming, that you can't see all of it, is precisely the reason we're concerned that he might actually be alive, and one day he's going to come back. However, Mayim sheyesh lahem sof, water that does have an end, that you could see all sides of the water, and you waited a significant amount of time and it didn't emerge. So that is a significant proof to be brought to Beis Din to clarify whether indeed that's enough to prove that he's dead, because he couldn't have emerged anywhere else. And if he's in there, as we understand he was, he must be dead by now, because humans can't live under such circumstances for that amount of time. These principles are obviously not limited to the case of water, but they are extrapolated to other similar cases. An example in modern times was people who were in the 9/11 events. They were in the building on a high floor, and that could well be classified as mayim sheyesh lahem sof, that we're able to see all elements of the event, and we know that the person did not emerge. And if they were in that situation, knowing what happened to that situation, that may possibly be sufficient proof. Again, we need to know that they didn't get out unbeknownst to us, and there are significant factors, but simply to be aware that whatever we're learning represents principles rather than physical. It's got to be in water, otherwise we can't bring a proof. The Mishnah states, Ha'isha shaholcha hi ubailo limedinas hayom. A woman went to a faraway country together with her husband. Shalom beino leveino. There was peace between her and her husband. V'shalom ba'olam. And there's peace in the world. Uba ve'amran. She comes back and she says, Me'spaili. My husband died. Tinase. Her word is sufficient. If she knows personally that he's dead, she would be able to remarry. And she would be able to do yibum if her husband, according to her words, has died. He's died without children. She would be able to do yibum with the living brother. However, shalom beino leveino umelchama ba'olam. If there was war in the world, kitato beino leveino, or there were quarrels of significance between them, v'shalom ba'olam, even though there's peace in the world, uvasa v'omran, she comes and says, me'spaili, my husband's dead, eina ne'menes, we don't believe her. So it's easy to understand if there were arguments of significance between them. We need to know what arguments of significance are described. In Shulchan Aruch it's brought that he left her an aguna previously, or she told Beis Din that he divorced her, and it turns out that he didn't, and we verified it with witnesses. So we're talking about significance ketata. We're not talking about a disagreement that happens in marriage. But in such a ketata, we understand why she's not believed, because she's under a lot of pressure, and she might be a liar, and we can't believe her. However, what is it that's milchama ba'olam? There's a war in the world. So what? She says he's dead. What difference does it make that there's a war in the world? So let's drop down to the Gemara. We're counting down from the beginning of the Perek, about 8 lines. Mid to end of the line, Amar Rava, Rava explained, my time of the milchama, why is wartime different? Mishum da amra bididami, because she's willing to say based on impressions. Salka daitach, she thinks, b'chalhaini de iktil, everybody got killed. Who, Palit? You really think he escaped? And the way this is brought in Shulchan Aruch is that she knows that the people before her husband online got killed. And she knows that the people behind him online got killed. She's want to make an assumption that he got killed as well. And that's not sufficient. Milchama, even if she says that he's dead, we still need additional verification. Let's look at the first wide line at the bottom of the page. Middle of the line, Sava Rava Lamema, Rava thought to say, Ra'avon Eino Kemelchama. If she says he died in a famine, that should not be considered like a war, and rather it should be definitive and acceptable verification on her say so. Delo Amra Bididami, because I can't imagine she's going to say her husband died of starvation, based on impressions. She must really know. Hadar amar Rava ra'avan areu kemelchama. But then Rava retracted and said that famine should be classified just like war, that the person saying it is want, the woman is want to have an impression, even though it didn't really happen. Dahid asas lekame de Rava, because there was a woman who came to Rava, Amra le, and she said to him, Baili meis barav, my husband died in the famine. She was definitive. Amalah and Rava decided to cross-examine her in a creative way. He said, Shapra vadata deshezvech nafshech, it's a good thing that you left him there to die. Saka daitach, would anybody think, Debeahu purta denafifsa deshavska slay havachaye? Could anybody imagine that he could possibly live? In other words, he intimated, maybe he wasn't dead yet, but you did right by leaving him and saying that he's dead, because of course he's dead. Amra le, and she responded, Marnami Yoda, oh, you're right, that's what I did. Tichihai gavna lo chaye, because I knew he wouldn't live. And Rava suddenly exposed her through his empathy that she really did not see the death. Hada amar Rava, and therefore Rava said, Ra'avon griya mimelchama, a famine is worse than battle. De'ilu milchama, by war, ki amra meis baili ba'milchama, if she says, my husband died in the battle, but she says, during wartime, meis al mitaso, that he died on his bed, mehemna, that we will believe. But by a famine, ad omra mesu kevartiv, we have to actually hear from her that she buried him, because otherwise we're worried bididomi that she's saying based on impressions. The Gemara continues with other cases. Mapolis, if a person was in a ruin, shiluach nechashim veakrabim, if the person dealt with snakes and scorpions, there was an incident, he was thrown into such a pit. We have to know all of these different cases, how they play out, as well as dever, a plague, what kind of testimony is acceptable, and when are we worried that the person is speaking unwarranted based on assumptions. Yashar Koach, thank you for joining.